Chieftain Thunderstar Tormenta is actually an extension of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a description of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is living a life based on the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, there is no difference between the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam in that sense. However, it is Srimad Bhagavatam put into practice. But there is one thing which is only mentioned very shortly in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, which is Trisakrishnam, Krishnavanam, Sangutam Kaspitar Sadam, Yadya Sankirtanam Sante, Ayanti Yusuve Saha. It is explained that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, this time not as Krishna, but as A-Krishna. This time not in a blackish form, but in a non-blackish form. And that he will be appear along with his associates and spread the sanctum. So there's a few verses which describe Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bhagavatam. But that mercy is not elaborately described.
The Chaitanya Charitamrita
is in great detail describing the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Kara Vichar, Vichar Kaita, Chitta Bhava Chamatkar. He's saying that if you are interested in logic, then apply that logic in trying to understand the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you do so, you will become amazed. Because it is by that mercy that everything becomes possible.
So that principle is the foundation of our discussion tonight. And not only of our discussion, but it is the very foundation of our spiritual life. We cannot practice
spiritual life without mercy. That is very clear. The circumstances are not favorable. We are struggling. And before I start to read, I want to say a few more introductory things. One more. To put in a pass code and recognizing the fingerprint. Okay, did it. And now I have to. I'm going to put it more in the dark.
So, for 2 days, we'll be discussing the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I wanted to say, to call it, to see our life reflected in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in a way, I'm approaching it from where we are. I'm not just going to give a discourse from the book, but I'm going to try and connect it to our own lives. So let me say a few things. Lord Chaitanya's movement started he appeared, as we know, in 1486. By that time, Bengal had been under Muslim rule for almost 3 centuries. Because it was in the year 1204 that a group of Turkish Muslims came across and they disguised themselves as traders in horses. And in this way, they entered the palace and then suddenly, from inside the palace, attacked without giving the king a proper challenge of Rabbi Warning. The king was very much was very much a ruler, a Kshatriya. And as a Kshatriya, he was accustomed to fight according to Kshatriya principles. And because the Muslims did not follow the Kshatriya principles, but rather attacked in a hidden way, they caught him unprepared. And they managed to kill the royal guard in the palace, and the king could only escape through a tunnel and go in hiding. That's how it was. And from that point on, Muslim rule was a fact in Bengal. It was certainly not easy for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. So many years later, Bengal was very much controlled by strong Muslim influence, and they were oppressing the Hindu culture. Although Muslim presence was limited to mainly a military presence, some Sufis had also come and started to actually convert people to the strength of philosophy. But the main conversion wasn't going because of that. It was because Hindus were being taxed. Hindus were being taxed, and that was something that was too troublesome. So all the poor converted. And then there was also forceful conversions by putting flesh in the mouths of people. And because at the time, in India, Vedic culture itself had also evolved. It had evolved to a culture which was very much controlled by smarta brahmanas. Smarta brahmanas, you see, in India, we will find that some brahmanas are known as chaturvedi. In Mathura, you'll find many chaturvedis. We have also trivedis. And then we have some brahmanas who are known as Parashara or Gautam. Like this, we have some gotras, some lineages, Bharadvaj. We have some lineages in various Brahminical families. So that is there. But what happened was the Vedas, they offer us rituals, which are offerings and glorifications of various devatas. But these rituals are not so much dealing with everyday life. Whereas the Smriti, the Dharma Shastra, is very practical, because there are all kinds of samskaras which are being performed, which deal directly with life. When you want to conceive a child, what do? Samskara is there. After the child is in the womb, samskara. After the child is born, samskara. And so on and so on. It gives all these regulations for social life. There was a Dharma Shastra, was popular. So therefore, Brahmas who were studying these scriptures, which is Smriti, they were considered of a lower class. Higher class was actually considered the Upanishads, which were giving knowledge of liberation and so on. But most Grihasthas, liberation is all good and well, but there are other things to deal with right now. And that was deal with life. And therefore, the smarta brahmana's influence gradually increased and increased. They were teaching the Smriti and put all the emphasis on properly executing ritual. So everything was ritual, must be done correctly, and then you get a correct result. So this was the essence, very important. So India has been in the grip of Smarta Brahmanas for at least 1,000 years. And for at least the last 1,000 years, Smarta Brahmanas were very prominent in India. And so that is a development in Vedic culture itself that we have to keep in mind when we are looking at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we trace the history of Smarta Brahmanism, we see that it started in South India, that South Indian families invited Kashmiri Brahmanas who were in the same line to strengthen them. Then they became very strong, and then they began to spread to other places, and eventually also to Bengal, where also Smarta Brahmanism became very predominant. So the Smarta Brahmanas, they were not appreciative of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement at all. They were rather, they complained to the Muslim government because they said that instead of following all the ritual, now they are just chanting, they are worshipping only Krishna. Why are they worshipping only Krishna? Yes. What kind of concoction is this? They were not aware of scriptural injunctions pointing towards Krishna exclusively. Of course, Gaudiya Vaishnavas were there. Madhavendra Puri is described as the first. He is the seed. He is the one in whom this bhakti first developed. And his disciple, Iswara Puri, and he is the disciple, he is the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So like this, it spread. One early disciple, so all the disciples of Madhavendra Puri, they were the early devotees in Bengal who brought this Krishna consciousness to the foreground. Advaita Acharya was among them, and many others. And they brought forward this Krishna consciousness in Bengal. Advaita Acharya, he would in his house conduct Bhagavad Gita classes. And he was teaching Gita Satya Path, or you can the true understanding of the Gita, or Bhagavad Gita as it is. That was his aim, to teach Bhagavad Gita as it is. So in this way we see how what the environment was. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was appearing in a very easy environment. And that as the movement 500 years ago was really beginning, that then it was easy and now it's difficult. It wasn't easy at all. It was, the country was occupied by Muslim rulers who were oppressive of any Hindu practices. Then, on top of that, the Hindus, the established Hindu order, was complaining about what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing. So, his movement had it very difficult. Advaita Acharya, he was much older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was 53 years older. So Advaita Acharya was well established before. And Advaita Acharya was from a Varendra Brahmana family, which is an aristocratic Brahmana background, highly recognized. From East Bengal, and when he came and settled in Shantipur, he was aristocratic. His grandfather was a ministry. So they had ancestral property just outside of Shantipur. You can still find it today. And he also had a house in the city. So he was, plus he had another house in Navadvip. So he was, aristocratic, wealthy Brahmana. And very respected. He was very learned. It was very difficult to argue with Advaita Acharya because he could defeat anyone by his learning, but not only by his learning, he also had a very loud voice. His voice was thundering, and he was a big person. So in front of Advaita Acharya, who had such a loud voice, everyone was some of the children covered their ears. And so in this way, Advaita Acharya was very powerful. And therefore he could do things that no one else could do. There was Haider Stakur, Muslim, but chanting and so on, and we don't know exactly how Haridas became a devotee. That we don't know. We know that he appeared in a Muslim family. There is a village which they are saying is his birthplace in the Jessore district, which is Bangladesh, just across the border from Mayapur. But there is no trace in that village. And nobody will tell you anything in that village. It's a Muslim village. So what will they say? So in that way, we cannot really trace out Sona's history. But we know that Haridas was chanting in a place called Benapur. Nowadays, Benapur is just situated across the border of Bangladesh. And it is right on the Indian border, immediately after. So this Benapur is the place where Haridas was chanting. It's not so far from Shantipur. So Haridas would go regularly to Shantipur and meet with Advaita Acharya, and there was a real connection. Because Haridas was also much older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was some 35 years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So like this, we see he was among the elders. So one day, during performance of the Strada ceremony, which Advaita Acharya was performing at the time, he offered the Strada Patra. At one point, there are offerings to be made to the Brahmanas, one is meant to feed the Brahmanas. And instead of feeding the Brahmanas, he said, "Oh Haridas, you are much greater than any Brahmana," and he offered him the Strada Patra. Haridas, please, you know, how can you do this? You know, my people, and he said, "No, it's all right, don't worry. You know, they can't do anything against me. Who can stand up against me?" So in this way, okay, then even Haridas couldn't stand up and had to take it. And nothing happened because no one had the strength to argue with the Advaita Acharya. But anybody less powerful would have been ostracized from the Brahmin community for doing something like that. Yeah, that was outrageous. Giving Sarapata to a Muslim. Even nowadays, in India, people who raise an eyebrow want to speak 500 years ago. So, just to sketch a little bit with these stories, the background of where we are, that the Sankirtan movement. The Sankirtan movement did not start in an easy environment. So sometimes we might think, then of course it was all much easier than now.
When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he brought a tradition from India to the West, and it was like a transplant. One of the things that was transplanted from east to west was Tulsi. Govinda Dasi, who was Prabhupada's early disciple, she gets the credit of growing the first Tulsi in the West. And Tulsi came here, and Tulsi is doing very well. So, just as that was a big transplant, and we know that sometimes they use like hot lights in the West for Tulsi because the sun is not strong enough compared to India. It's difficult for Tulsi outside of India. So they put some artificial hot light to get Tulsi to grow. So in the same way, our Sachinanda Maharaj from Germany, his father was a director in the German railways. So that is a big position, obviously, big man. German railways, not small thing. So his father, he met with Prabhupada, and his father said to Prabhupada, "How will it be possible
for a crocodile to live in the river Rhine. In Germany is the Rhine. He says, how can a crocodile live in the Rhine? And Prabhupada answers, he says, no, it's not a problem. They can be devotees in plain clothes. Yeah? So Prabhupada, and then after he says, oh, your spiritual master is very intelligent, because he understood the riddle. You know, we might scratch our head. You know, how can a crocodile live in the Rhine? But Prabhupada understood it. Then it was again a crocodile in an alien environment, in a foreign culture, where the crocodile didn't belong, in a cold river Rhine, where no crocodiles naturally are living. How could a crocodile survive? How could Krishna consciousness survive in the Western world? Yeah, of course, we're seeing that there was a transcendental Gaudiya Vaishnava culture. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's culture was completely transcendental. It was not just Vedic. They were chanting Hare Krishna, they were going beyond the limitations of just Vedic culture. Anybody who is chanting Hare Krishna is becoming a devotee of Krishna. And that's all they cared for. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy were in a conversation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the questions. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, he said, what constitutes education? What is important in education? And Ramananda Roy said, no education is important other than Krishna consciousness. Now, okay. So that was a very transcendental approach. Yeah, that was an approach that was not considering anything else. Now you see the same in Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada also, he had a very transcendental approach. Prabhupada was not at all interested in modern mundane education. He had no such thing as we have to prepare our children for functioning in the world. Prabhupada had another idea. His idea was, he started communities with devotees. First, in 1959, he wrote a paper about Gita Nagaris, or villages dedicated to the Gita. And later, when he was in America, he started such a village, Gita Nagari. And there is a project called Gita Nagari. And his idea was, it would be villages where people would live from the land and from protection of cows, and completely centered around the knowledge of the Gita and nothing else. And the devotees would live there as devotees, just speak about Krishna, and all other things would be sort of learned on the job, but no question for any need for mundane education and so on. However, that didn't work out, because such a community could only work out if there would be, along with it, a very realized, loving Krishna conscious leader. One who could generate surrender and trust in people. Yeah. If there is such a Krishna conscious leader who completely emanates trust, maybe then people would say, okay, we don't care about private property, we just live in a community, we'll just do service in the community provides for us, and we'll just take shelter of that. But if you don't have complete trust, you will say, yeah, that's all good and well, but you know, what if the temple president doesn't like you tomorrow, and then, you know, you're out on the street. It's better to have your own house and some papers, you know, that it's yours and no one can throw you out and so on. And what if your income is dependent on the temple? It's nice, but again, what if they don't like you and then tomorrow you're out and you're on the street? That's also not a good idea. Better to have an education which secures a job in the world and all these things. That is what devotees start to say. And we all drifted away from the original commune model which Prabhupada had in mind. There were several big projects which he started like that, like in that community spirit. And everyone would just live there without really private property and in different ashrams and, you know, and just serve in the project. But it's gradually changed. And it first of all broke down, as I said, in that the leader was not mature and not completely a deep self-realized Vaishnava who could generate the trust in people. So we see Prabhupada tried to create an environment where devotees could be sheltered from the world. And that's important, and that's the beginning because of this seminar, because one of the common discussions I have, like every day, all over the world, with people who are in the world, they are explaining to me how much they struggle in Krishna consciousness. Every day, this is what I have to hear. Every day. And it's like, whomever I meet with, that's what I hear. And many times, the reason for that struggle is not due to individual issues, but due to social issues. It is due to the world we live in, where there is no time, and where, you know, issues are like, how can you make sure your children are Krishna consciousness when you have to send them to a mundane school? Or when both parents have to work to just manage to pay for the loan on the house, which you really need since the third child has just come. And then daycare, you know, which is, by the way, so expensive that, you know, it takes all the money you earn, practically speaking. Anyway, the whole artificial way of life. So that artificial way of life creates a lot of stress in our spiritual life because it's not designed for spiritual life. It wasn't made for spiritual life. Prabhupada says things in lectures like, we should only work 6 hours for our maintenance. You go tell your boss.
See what he said. See if he agrees, you know. I mean, even a devotee boss wouldn't agree, you know. Some devotees here are bosses, and I don't think they will give their employees 6 hours. They couldn't, because they would go bankrupt, because the whole system is not designed in that way. So what to do? So we complain. It's so hard to chant. It's so hard to go to the temple. It's so hard to read. It's so hard to make the children Krishna conscious. It's so hard to rise early in the morning because I'm so tired. I mean, true. Granted, you are right. It is true. It is hard. I will not sit here as the Swami and say, how can you be so weak? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? This is just due to your mental weakness, and if you would be a little stronger, then certainly you would be able to overcome this weakness. Oh, Arjuna, you must now go to battle and fight the fight.
that and sent you off on the battle on your own Kurukshetra. After the first arrows started coming your direction, well, maybe I'm not Arjuna after all. So, like this, it's not so easy. Anyway, we are going now to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we'll see that we have similarities with the personalities that are described in the book, and we see that there are differences between our life in the modern world and their life. But I just first preface it that we shouldn't just think that they had it easy and that we never, and that we are the only ones who are struggling. And some things, if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, haven't changed at all. Mahaprasada. The book is full of descriptions of devotees having Mahaprasada. And it wouldn't be difficult to start writing in Melbourne, yeah, about Mahaprasada. You know, if you ask someone, can you please write an article about Mahaprasada in Melbourne? I think you could manage it. I think there's enough to write about. But you wouldn't have to go far. You just look at your neighbors. And, as she put a cauliflower pakora in her mouth, the expression on her face changed. You can start your story like that. And it's like, you have different kinds of prasada eaters. You have the ones who sneak in late at night in the darkness, right? And who just go for the last offering. And there is Bhakta Greg, who controls. You cannot get on the wrong side of it. So there are things, you could write about mom or something. Anyway. So as we are I cannot multitask. So give me 2 seconds to shut down from you and focus on this thing, otherwise it doesn't work. I want to read from the Adi Lila, chapter 17. It is the last chapter of the Adi Lila. Adi Lila is the first part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life. And now in the Adi Lila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a young man. He has, as Nimai Pandit, as the scholar, already defeated that famous Keshav Kashmiri scholar, Digvijay Pandit, who actually was a prominent person in the Nimbarka Sampradaya. So, some are saying that in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the superiority of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Anyway, later on, Lord Nityananda also came into Navadvip. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya was a young man who was broad-shouldered like a lion, who would wear his Brahmin thread on his chest, and Ananta Sesh would personally appear in that Brahmin thread. And he looked very aristocratic. At that time, Lord Nityananda would accompany him. One day, the Lord sat down in the corridor of a Vishnu temple and began calling very loudly, "Bring some honey, bring some honey." Nityananda Prabhu Gosai, understanding the ecstatic mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, brought a pot of Ganges water as a token and put it before him. After drinking the water, Lord Chaitanya became so ecstatic that he began to dance. Thus everyone saw the pastime of attracting the river Yamuna. We remember that pastime of Lord Balaram, and that Balaram was intoxicated and that Balaram wanted to bathe with young girls in the Yamuna, and the Yamuna wasn't coming near because the Yamuna saw that Balaram was intoxicated. Then Balaram was getting upset. He said, Yamuna, come here. Yamuna didn't come. Then Balaram took his plow and with that plow began to pull the Yamuna and said, I'll punish you and I'll turn you into many little streams. Oh, Yamuna became afraid. She didn't want to be turned into many little streams. So then Yamuna came before Balaram and said, I'm so sorry, please, please forgive me. And in this way, we can see that in Vrindavan, the Yamuna still in some areas has many streams because of Balaram's scratching with the plow. When the Lord, in his ecstasy of Baladev, was moving as if intoxicated by the beverage, Advaita Acharya, the chief of the Acharyas, Acharya Shekhar, saw him in the form of Balaram. Vanamali Acharya saw a golden plow in the hand of Balaram, and the devotees all assembled together and danced, overwhelmed by ecstasy. So not everyone saw, but Advaita Acharya saw, Vanamali Acharya saw. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealing that he was the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, he was hiding it.
Because he was acting as a devotee of the Lord, to teach devotees.
In this way, they danced continuously for 12 hours. And in the evening, they all took a bath in the Ganges and then returned to their homes. So that's quite a festival. If you think about it, it's described only shortly in a few verses. But it is quite a festival when we see that 12 hours, they danced for 12 hours. So the mood became very ecstatic. Because if we have a 12-hour festival here, we would call it a big festival. That's a big festival.
The Lord ordered all the citizens of Navadvip to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and in each and every home they began performing sankirtan regularly. All the devotees sang this popular song along with the Hare Krishna mantra. Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Nama Govala Govindaram Srimadu Sitaram.
So that actually was a song that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liked very much. As Srila Prabhupada explains, it was a favorite of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that he was also chanting.
When the Sankirtan movement thus started, no one in Navadvip could hear any sound other than the words Hari, Hari, and the beating of the mridangam and the clashing of handbells. Hearing the resounding vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, the local Muslims, greatly angry, submitted a complaint to the Qazi. Chand Qazi angrily came to one home in the evening, and when he saw kirtan going on, he broke a mridangam and spoke as follows. For so long you did not follow the regulative principles of the Hindu religion, but now you're following them with great enthusiasm. May I know by whose strength you're doing so?
And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada said, it appears that from the aggression of Bhaktiyar Kiriji in Bengal under the time of Chand Qazi, Hindus were the followers of the Vedic principles were greatly suppressed. Like the Hindus in present-day Pakistan, practically no one could execute the Hindu religious principles freely. Chand Qazi referred to this condition of Hindu society. Formerly, the Hindus had not been straightforward in executing the Hindu principles, but now they were free in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Therefore, it must have been by the strength of someone else that they were so daring. Actually, that was the fact. Although the members of the so-called Hindu society had followed the social customs and formulas, they practically forgotten to execute their religious principles strictly. But with the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they actually began following the religious principles according to his order.
That order is still existing, and anywhere and everywhere, in all parts of the world, one can execute it. That order is to become a spiritual master under the direction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by following the regulated principles, chanting daily at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and preaching the cult of Krishna consciousness all over the world. If we adhere to the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we shall get spiritual strength without a doubt. We shall be free to preach this cult of the Hare Krishna movement and not be hampered by anyone.
So,
it's interesting how in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that Vrindavan Das Thakur, he wrote the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it said that Vrindavan Das Thakur was an incarnation of Vedavyas, who had now appeared to describe the pastimes of the Lord as Lord Chaitanya. Then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that in the future, many more manifestations of Vedavyas will appear, and they will reveal many more pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what to make of that?
We see that
different biographers wrote on the pastimes and qualities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The last one of them was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Sometimes it is said that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is like the last word, the final word. After all the other biographies, that is the ultimate explanation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and yet he writes in the future, more will be described. Why is it so? Yes. We are seeing, for example, we have the Prabhupada Lilamrita. So that Prabhupada Lilamrita is describing Krishna consciousness as it was performed in the presence of Srila Prabhupada and how the movement spread. And sometimes it was quite amazing. For example, we have a description how Prabhupada went to Athens, and he did not, which is in Greece, right? And Prabhupada, he only was in transit on the airport. He was only in transit on the airport. But what happened was, there was one devotee who was from America, who was part of the temple in San Francisco. He had traveled to Greece and he had convinced some people to do kirtan. So they were doing kirtan outside the terminal, on the terminal. And Prabhupada was on the inside, but he could hear the kirtan. He could hear it through the glass walls of the terminal. So when he was inside, in transit, Prabhupada heard kirtan. And he knew that this movement could also be successful here, because kirtan was already there before you arrived, like that. So we see somehow or other Prabhupada's movement is spreading everywhere, and the chanting of Hare Krishna is spreading. It's the story of the chanting of Hare Krishna as it's spreading. So, we can understand that this is a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. We can understand that we are right now in a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. We are here, in this temple. Right? Which is like, it is not an ordinary Hindu temple. It is not some temple where you just go for some blessings. Blessings are good. Blessings, yes. We want blessings and so on. But it's not just about blessings. It's about completely giving your life. And no less. And Prabhupada is sitting here to remind us, right, that this is the place where you surrender your life to what? To Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Therefore, this is part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And all these pastimes we can write now. You can write down. You can write down the pastimes of Melbourne Temple. It was interesting when we had that, was it 40 year anniversary? Yeah, it was 40 years. I was, somehow or other, I was there, and it was interesting to see how it went. How it went. We saw that first, that all these first devotees were Australians. Right? They were all Australians because their, and some Americans came here to start this, and then their followers were Australians. Right? And we saw that on that evening. We saw all the devotees were like Australian devotees. Because Prabhupada came. At the time, there were not many Indians living at all in Australia. There were not many. And in the temple, there were only Australian devotees, in a smaller congregation. I remember that on Janmashtami, there was, I was here on Janmashtami in mid-80s, and Purna had cooked 400 preparations, and they were all good. Each one of us. And I also remember that we ate all those 400 preparations. There were not that many guests, that so the prasadam, the devotees ate the lion's share of the best of the feast. I'm remembering. Yes. So that was interesting. And then in that evening, later in the evening, after first some of the older devotees had spoken, then there was a play of the devotees of Melbourne Temple today, right? And practically all were from India, right? And I think Bhakti was in the play, I think. Old star. But otherwise, it was most of the actors were from India. So, whatever way this movement is going, and everyone from India thought they were coming to Australia to make some progress in life. Well, you sure did. But not in material life, in spiritual life. Unexpectedly, you walked into the Hare Krishna temple thinking it was a Hindu temple. But it is much more than that. Thinking you'd get blessings from Krishna. You got blessings from Krishna, but you got more blessings. You also got blessings from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That deity you didn't look at so much, because it was not so much part in your tradition. You looked more at Krishna and the name of Radha Krishna. That's why you came. But meanwhile, you became influenced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in quite a way. And his representative, Srila Prabhupada, pulled you right into the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And now we are chanting Hare Krishna. And now we are taking prasad. And now we are, yes, we are struggling. We're struggling. The circumstances are not so favorable. But as you can see, the circumstances were also not so favorable in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. If Prabhupada describes here that the conditions were just like in Pakistan today, Hindus in Pakistan today, doesn't sound that good, does it? I mean, who wants to be a Hindu in Pakistan? Any volunteers? I would rather go to other places. I could imagine better places than that. Not easy at all. So it wasn't easy, but somehow or other, they did it. The devotees did it. Not just because they felt that this is my duty. No. It wasn't just on the strength of duty. It was simply because how could they do anything else? because they got the taste. First of all, we're doing this Krishna consciousness because we got a taste. Just as these devotees, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, they became so enthused, so enthusiastic that they started to chant publicly. You know, publicly, at a time of oppression. And the Muslim magistrate rightly said, where are they getting their strength? Where are they getting it? Someone must have inspired them in some extraordinary way that they're now doing this.
We may say the same thing. Where are we getting our strength?
Where are we getting this? And of course, we all first of all point to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone in this movement will do that. And then his representatives. And then we go back. And then we say, the six Goswamis. Then we say, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And somehow or other, it comes like that to us. Because Prabhupada brought it to us. In that regard, I like to tell the story of Brahmananda Prabhu, who was in Vrindavan telling memories about Srila Prabhupada, and then someone asked him a question and said, Brahmananda, you were there in the very early days with Prabhupada. Do you feel that there was, in the beginning, it was so close, like a family, right? Do you feel that it was different, that your relationship was different with Prabhupada in the beginning and later on? And Prabhupada said,
when you're a child, your father is your father. And when you're grown up, your father is still your father. He said, what's the difference? Same relationship.
And he says, no, it hasn't changed. And then this devotee said, oh, I can see your love for Prabhupada is so great, you are worshipping as God. And Ramana said, oh no, not as God. No, that is a mistake. Prabhupada is not God. Right? Prabhupada is as good as God. He said, but these days I think he's better than God. Because he came to the Lower East Side and saved me. And then his voice could speak at once. Brahmananda had such deep love for Prabhupada, such deep love. But he made an important point, how he said, even better than God, right? Because he came in person. So that way, a lot of focus on Prabhupada. He came. And those of us who are now acting as spiritual masters, are doing so in service to Srila Prabhupada. Not that we are saying, oh, now we are the replacement. We're not the replacement. He is still the Acharya, the founder of Acharya. He's still the one who gave this movement of Lord Chaitanya for the modern people, and who made us part of this movement, and in that way, part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Therefore, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is very important. If you don't read it, you're sort of not connecting with what we really are. We are here because of Lord Chaitanya. That's it. You didn't know when you left India, well, you didn't know when you went to school in Australia, those who are from Australia. I didn't know in Holland. As I was growing up, they asked me as a child what I wanted to become. And my brother wanted to be a policeman, and I wanted to be a lawyer.
I don't know why I wanted to be a lawyer,
but I could have been a lawyer. I can talk. So I could have been, no problem. but somehow or other I got saved. But I said many things which are, at different points in my life of what I wanted to be, but I never said Hare Krishna. If anyone asked me, what would you want to be in the future? I never said Hare Krishna. Did you ever think, Parabrahma, that you would be walking around in an orange dress? With a little tiki? If they would have told you that 10 years ago, what would you have said? You are correct. And all of us.
But somehow or other it happened.
And how you came, it doesn't matter. Whether you came through your son, of course all of us came at one point because of prasad. We met someone who said, oh, they have very tasty sabji puri and some halva and something. So I said, oh, and very nice mandir. Oh, very good prasad. So I said, okay, we'll go there. Let's go.
Yes,
very nice. It is very nice. So that is what Siddhartha's movement. That was the same 500 years ago.
And then there's kirtan. This kirtan
is something that is very easy. It's like now is a lecture, and it won't go on so much longer. Stop at 9. Now there's a lecture, and the children get restless. They cry. Sometimes you have to take them out when it gets too much. What to do? Even squeak from outside.
In protest.
Because kids, they are not as innocent as they look. They know when to cry. They know when to cry. Very well. But when there's kirtan, they're all quiet and they like it. Kirtan is good. So, therefore, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is very much part of our life. And we are actually part of it. And although we're living in a different world, but the same mercy has come into our world. Just as that mercy came into an India that was on the Muslim roll and was oppressed, but it came in and people just, and the devotees were in a minority, just as now. And somehow or other they would meet together and they would have kirtan and they would have prasad. And sometimes they would chant between bites. Have you tried that? They were very eager. They were very enthusiastic. So, today I wanted to give an introduction. And with that I have sort of done. Tomorrow I will reach you and like a few different fires about kirtan, about taking prasad and all these kinds of things. See where it will go from there. Now, if there are some questions or comments, then I will give 12 more minutes for that. See you.
Yes?
Other than the four regulatory principles, how important the other rules are regarding wearing certain kind of clothes or shaving your head or shaving your face, whereas Sri Advaita Acharya had a long beard?
I'm just trying to remember where I read it.
Mm.
I read it today, and I'm just trying to remember now where. I'll first tell you what I read, and then I'll try to remember where. So what I read was that the devotees were very eager to put on all the marks of Vaishnava on their bodies. And they were very happy to decorate their body with tilak and to put the kunti bala around
and to wear
the devotional attire. They were very happy to do so, because all these things were pleasing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, it was a very joyous thing.
I think I read it in
Madhya Lila chapter 9, and tomorrow I'm going to look it up for you and I'll make sure that I'll read it to you.
Because I'm not sure if it was there, because I was reading in different places. That's what you get there.
But anyway, the point though from there is that we wear this dress not out of duty. No. We wear this dress because it is full of transcendental energy. One time, I was on a train from Calcutta, and one boy, local boy, Bengali boy, he was wearing shorts with some sort of flowery design on it. Right? He had like flower Bermuda shorts. Right? And he looks at my dhoti and he goes like, ha! He says, ha! You know, how can you walk around these clothes? Right? He goes, ha! Ha! So I went to him, ha! Ha! Yeah? How can you walk around those clothes? And then he says, like, oh. And then I said to him, I said, are you wearing those clothes every day? He said, no, not every day. You know, sometimes I have different clothes for different days. I said, you like those clothes? I like them very much. I said, yes. I said, but you're not wearing them every day. He said, no, not every day. I said, oh, these clothes, I wear them every day. You know why? Because they're spiritual. And therefore they don't get boring. And therefore I don't need to put like one day flower pants and the next day stripes and the next day blocks and all these varieties. Because it satisfies. Because it's spiritual. Because with the dress, I'm trying to say something. Like, I noticed that you have like expressive dresses, you know, you have your American Star outfit, and then this morning you're also wearing like quite a designer's t-shirt. And just to contradict me, you have now put on your white t-shirt. So when it comes to dress, you're a tricky dresser. So, but you know, don't think that you're gonna lose out when you don't have all those outfits to choose from anymore. Because just by wearing this, you can be very it's clothes that connect you with Krishna. That's very nice. Yes.
And you can get some chala or something, you know, something special chala, some border or something.
Something. You can get different size neck beads, you know, big ones or small. Or those ones with little gold in between. Yes, yes. So, you can get some. Come on. or other things. So there is enough opportunity for individual expression. But it's all spiritual. So it's actually nice. It's called, see, it's like nowadays the uniform of the day is jeans. See, jeans. Yeah. It's like this gentleman over here, got the typical, you know, modern dress, you know, jeans, right? Him also, they have jeans. I'm sure there's more people with jeans in the room, right? Jeans. Okay. And t-shirt, you know, some sort of t-shirt, right? Now it's like, and then when it's cold, a fleece jacket or something, you know. Yeah. And that's like, you know, the typical kind of uniform. And you can get a badge, kind of a soldier. Sorry. So everything is expressing something, right? Clothes, they have some meaning. Like the blue jeans, they were originally, they came in a big way in the West as free time clothing. Right? People at work would wear like more pants, you know, like formal pants, you know, with a nice crease in the middle, right? Official dress. And then at home, change for the blue jeans. But then the times got more relaxed, and you could even start wearing blue jeans at work, which before was absolutely out of the question. Right? But now you can, nowadays. Johnny. So it shows, it is an expression of something. It's not just, you know, that, well, I like to wear jeans, they're comfortable, or I prefer a suit, or I prefer a dhoti. No, everything has a message. Everything has a lifestyle attached to it. So the blue jeans has the sort of relax everything lifestyle, you know. I mean, the relax principles, everything goes lifestyle, you know. There you go. That's, of course, not everyone wears blue jeans. Necessarily does all these things. Not saying that, you know. But still, the clothes kind of emanate that mood. So these clothes emanate surrender and devotion to Krishna. So isn't that nice? So that's why we wear them. But okay, you know, if for interaction with the world you have to wear other clothes, it's not forbidden. It's all right, but not as good as this. Doesn't come close. And these ones, one size fits all. So, especially in temple life, it's advantageous to have these kind of clothes because with the prasadam and so on, you know, you might gain weight and then what are you going to do? But the dhoti grows with you. Other questions? Comments?
Yes. If you can, a little loud because I'm deaf.
So the question is, you diagnose the problem earlier that we never face, which is we don't have time, we're always tired.
Yeah.
We don't kind of get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the solution?
Yeah. I identified the problem and I never gave a solution. But I think maybe one day we will go back to what Prabhupada offered to us, alternative communities where we will have our own Krishna conscious world, and where we say we're all going to buy a big block of land together, a big farm, and we're all going to live there, and we call it Hare Krishna land. And eventually there we'll have eat one day, we'll make everything our own, we grow our own, we make our own clothes, and one day we'll even have our own money. Like Prabhupada said, in Mayapur, one day we'll have our own money and we call it Chaitanyas. He said, right? So we can make such communities. We still have some places like New Govardhan is a big farm in the north. And really there could be a much larger community than there is. So maybe community life will help. What if we would, we have here Bhakta Bhavan, right? Whatever it is, it has some strength because there are all devotees living in there. What if we would do that in other places also? What if we would try to move together? Maybe that could strengthen us. Maybe that could help us. You can think about it. I mean, exactly how to do it, that you have to figure out with your accounts and on the table and look at, you know, prices and figure it out. Logistics. That I can't say from here. I can just give ideas. I think in the early days when Prabhupada started this movement, Jai Sisi Gaur. In the early days when Prabhupada started this movement, it was I'm gonna end. Because there are some more powerful personalities than me that take you over. But I would just like to finish my sentence. That in the early days of this time, Prabhupada had that idea to bring devotees more together. And that together they would create an alternative life. And it went on like that for a while, and then we went back into the world. I remember that in Vrindavan, in 1983, the vice president moved out from the temple to get a job. And we were all like shocked. We were shocked. He said, how could he do such a thing? How could he leave the temple and to go get a job? How is it possible? But nowadays, you know, you think like, how can the guy just live in the temple? Why doesn't he get a job? So, is it that life is difficult? Or is it that we have made it difficult for ourselves? I leave you with that question before we turn around and face their lordships for the evening arti, and meet again tomorrow night. And you can think about it. Is life difficult, or did we make it difficult? I think Prabhupada gave us an option to do something else, but it would require that we have deep relationships amongst each other. Relationships based on trust, with strong spiritual leaders who can guide us, who we can surrender to unite us, and then maybe we could do an amazing thing. And maybe that day will come, let's see. But for now, it's each man for himself and God for us all, and that maybe is the problem. Okay, leave you with that. Thank you.
Very good. crutches.
One devotee, child, 5 months.
Yeah, one devotee. Yeah.